Good morning.
Good morning.
It is good to be here, and we appreciate all the guests we have here as well. I know there's quite a few of you here this morning, and we hope that you'll come back again and continue to worship with us in the future. Next Sunday evening, we're going to have a special report on the work in Jamaica. I'm going to go through and talk about the work that I did there and that Sawyer did there and the work that's continuing to go on there, and we have a lot of photos, and I think it's going to be an encouraging evening. I've got a lot of things to share, and I'm excited about that. So make sure you're back next Sunday evening and we can talk about the work in Jamaica. This morning, I want to talk more about Jesus. This whole year, our focus has been on the life of Jesus and about the way his disciples left everything to go and completely devote themselves to following him. And so what we've been doing is we've been studying through Jesus' life. We've been picking out stories from all the different Gospels to better understand Jesus' life. And what I said in the beginning of this year is one of the things I really wanted to do is focus on Jesus' character. Where not only are we going to talk about some of the difficult commands that Jesus gave, which we've done a lot of that, but also just focus on understanding who Jesus is. And so that's what I want to do this morning, is get a better understanding of the character of Jesus. Because when we talk about imitating Jesus, before we can imitate Jesus, we've really got to understand who Jesus was. And I wish so much that I could go back in time and actually be there and see the way he interacted with people and understand it better. And we have so much recorded here. But I wonder, what was it really like to be there just in a day in the life of Jesus and try to and see the way he acted and the way he interacted with people? Because I think there's something that's hard to put your finger on with Jesus. Because you've got in one sense, you've got this fact that he's perfect. And that's hard for me to get my mind around, how it would be like to interact with someone who's completely sinless. And the other aspect, you also have the fact that Jesus is the Son of God, and so you've got this fact that he's God of the flesh, and how's that work? And what would that have been like to be there each day interacting with Jesus with that kind of a thing going on? I want to try to understand that better this morning. I think when you look at the life of Jesus in the Gospels, you sometimes we oversimplify it and think of it as, well, Jesus was just extremely loving, or Jesus was just very patient, or Jesus was just a lot more wise than other humans were, or just any of these. You take an attribute that's really good and you just magnify that and you say that's what Jesus was. When you look at the Gospels, I think it goes a lot deeper than that, and that's what I want to show this morning. There's something at the heart of all of it that was a whole lot deeper than just more loving or more good or more wise or more kind or any of those kinds of things. And that's what I want to try to put our finger on this morning. Turn in your Bibles to John chapter 7. This morning we're going to be in John chapter 7 and John chapter 8. And I think this is a great chapter for understanding this concept, because in this chapter you have people basically interviewing Jesus, or maybe interrogating Jesus, trying to figure out who this guy is. It's mostly people who don't believe in Jesus in this chapter. You have a few people who believe in him, but most of the questions are coming from people who don't really believe that he's the Son of God, but aren't quite sure what to think of this guy. So they're asking questions, examining different things, noticing things about him, trying to figure out, who is this guy? And I think we can learn a lot by seeing the kinds of things that they noticed about Jesus. Because those things they noticed about Jesus, that's going to help us better understand what Jesus actually looked like here on this earth. The setting of the chapter, chapter 7, is what's called the Feast of Booths or the Feast of Tents. It's a time when the Jews would all come together in the temple to worship God, and they would remember the time where they were wandering in the wilderness, and they would even make little tents that they'd live in for a little bit to remember the time when they were in this wilderness wandering period. But it was a time where most of the Jews would all come together here in Jerusalem. So it was a big time of worship, a big religious kind of day here, several days actually, that religious time where they would just spend a lot of time focused on God. So that's the setting here. And the chapter opens up with a sort of a rare occasion, a time where we actually see Jesus interacting with his own family. We don't have any instances of this where we see these kinds of conversations going on. But notice what happens right here at the beginning. Let's start in verse 3 of John chapter 7. So his brothers said to him, here's Jesus talking to his brothers back in Galilee, "Leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples also may see the works you are doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks also to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers believed in him. Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about its works that they are evil." All right, here's how this chapter opens up. We have this setting where here's Jesus and he's with his brothers. And his brothers, it says here, which is interesting, it says his brothers don't even believe in him. Here's the people who are, you think would be closest to him, and even they at this point are not believing in him. The previous chapter tells us this is the point in Jesus' ministry where a whole bunch of people quit believing in him. A whole bunch of people left when he started to give some more difficult teaching. So here's a setting where even his own brothers don't believe in him, and it almost sounds to me like they're taunting him. Now they're saying, "Oh, Jesus, why don't you go up to the feast? That would be a good idea." And knowing that here's all these people who are about ready to arrest him. And they're saying, "Why don't you go up to Jerusalem? Do some big open show that everybody can see. That's a good idea, Jesus." And so Jesus explains to him. He says, "Look, there's a difference between you and I." He says, "The world doesn't hate you guys, but you notice it does hate me. And the reason it hates me is because I'm bringing a message that nobody wants to hear. I'm bringing a message that their works are evil." He said, "Because of my message, that's why the world hates me." But the point I want to bring up from this is that right here at the beginning of the chapter, Jesus is trying to show there is a difference between him and most other people here. Here's his brothers. I mean, they're related to him physically, but he says there's a huge difference between the way who you are and who I am. All right, let's hold that in mind as we continue through this chapter. All right, so what happens is the brothers go up to the feast, and then Jesus stays back at home. But then a few days later into the feast, Jesus finally does go up to the feast, but he goes up secretly. And he goes up secretly, and then finally, on one of the days of the feast, he finally just shows up at the temple and just starts teaching people. And so it's kind of just a surprise to me. Whoa, how did he get here? We didn't know he was here. But before that happens, you have these conversations going on. When everybody's waiting, is Jesus going to come to the feast? Is he going to be here? What's going to happen? Are they going to arrest him? And look what it says in verse 11. The Jews were looking for him at the feast and saying, "Where is he?" And there was much muttering about him among the people. While some said, "He is a good man," others said, "No, he is leading the people astray." All right, so here's the big question that everybody has. Who is this Jesus? Who is this guy? And it's a time here where he's the talk of town. Everybody wants to talk about this guy. This is what everybody's talking about here at the feast. And there's two major consensuses. I mean, you've got the Jews who want to arrest him and everything, but then you've got these two different groups here. One is saying, "Well, I think he's a good man." The other is saying, "No, it seems like he's leading the people astray." So those are the two different competing views right now. Now, you can kind of understand how these views would come about. One is that he's a good person. If you look at Jesus and read the Gospels, he sounds like a good person. I mean, you've got someone who just spends his life helping people, I mean, healing people, caring about people. It seems like there's good would definitely be a way to describe who Jesus was. And it's interesting that even people who don't believe that he's the Son of God can look at him and say, he's a really good person. Even people who don't believe any of his teaching can just look and say, there's something really good about this person. But here's the paradox about Jesus. On the other hand, you have these people who are saying, no, there's something wrong with his teaching. He's leading people astray. If you don't believe Jesus is the Son of God, then you look at some of his teaching and you say, whoa, that is not good. You've got him making elaborate claims about himself, saying things that are just bordering on blasphemy. So here, how can you say this guy's good when he's saying these things that just no human should be saying? And so here you have this strange paradox of Jesus. In one sense, he seems so good. In the other sense, he's bringing a message that no human should bring, that just would not be described as good if you understand the Bible at all. All right, so that's the competing views about Jesus. So let's get into this feast here. What happens is eventually Jesus does show up at the feast. And he comes and he starts teaching the people. And the people start this sort of investigation, interrogation, trying to figure out who he is. And so throughout this chapter and the next chapter, they're going to be asking Jesus different questions, trying to piece together, who is this guy? Starts out, let's look in verse 14. About the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and began teaching. The Jews, therefore, marveled, saying, how is it that this man has learning when he has never studied? All right, so here's the first question that they ask. Where does his teaching come from? One of the things they notice first about Jesus is he does a lot of teaching, and his teaching's very unique. They're saying, where did he learn all this stuff? He didn't go to school anywhere. There's no big university that he went to. There's no really well-known rabbi that he studied under. Where did he learn all this stuff? I mean, his teaching, it's not that it's just weird and wacko. It's something that shows a lot of learning and understanding and everything. Where did he get this stuff? And so here's what Jesus says. Verse 16. So Jesus answered them, my teaching. So Jesus answered them, my teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. For if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority. Here's what Jesus says. The reason you don't recognize this teaching is that it didn't come from around here. You can't go to some school over there and say, oh yeah, that's where they taught it. Or look over here and say, oh yeah, that's the guy who told you to say this. Because it didn't come from some person here. It didn't even come from me. He says, it came from him who sent me. He's saying here, it came from God. That's where it came from. That's where my teaching originates. But now, here's what Jesus does. They're going to be asking him a series of questions. And each time they ask him a question, Jesus is not only going to answer the question, but then he's going to hold up a mirror and say, all right, now let me do a little examination on you. Now that you've examined me, let me just point out something about you. And that's kind of what he does here. He says, if anyone's will, this is verse 17, if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I'm speaking on my own authority. He's saying, you know what? You didn't actually need to ask me that question. If your will was to do God's will, if you were wanting to follow God, then when you heard me teaching, you'd say, oh, that sounds like God. If you were the kind of person who's really trying to do what God says, then you hear me teaching, you'd say, oh, that sounds so much like what God says. And he's pointing them back to the Old Testament saying, you know, if you were studying the law and trying to follow it and everything, then when I come in here and I start teaching, you say, oh yeah, that sounds like what we've been, like what we've heard all our lives of what the kind of message that comes from God. But he's saying there's a problem here. The fact that you don't recognize where my message comes from probably indicates that you're not all that interested in following God to begin with. Now, what's interesting to me about this is where Jesus is doing this. Here he is at the temple, at this big religious place, at this religious gathering. He's not talking to people off in a bar somewhere saying, oh, you don't want to follow God. He's talking to people who came here to worship, and he says, and it sounds to me like you don't want to follow God. That's a problem. All right, it's going to get worse. Let's keep going here. The next section, look with me in verse 18. Verse 18, here Jesus continues. He says, the one who speaks on his own authority seeks his own glory, but the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true, and in him there is no falsehood. All right, this one is not so much a question they ask, but a question Jesus chooses to answer. It's a question of, well, whose glory is this guy seeking? And here's what Jesus explains here. He's saying, this is another clue about my teaching. If I had made up my teaching, who would be the hero of the teaching? It would be me. But he says it's not that way. Instead, the goal of my teaching is not so much to elevate me, but to elevate him who sent me. He's saying the glory is all for God. That's the purpose of my teaching. Now, this is a strange thing about Jesus' teaching and about Jesus' life. In one sense, you could look at his teaching and say, it's very self-focused. You think about what Jesus taught. So much of Jesus' teaching, almost 100% of Jesus' teaching, was about Jesus. You think about that. You've got huge statements he makes. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. I mean, it's hard to get a more self-focused, self-centered sort of thing to say. So in one sense, you have his messages completely about him. And you can look at that over and over again throughout the Gospels. You see those kinds of messages. I mean, even in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you've heard it said, but I say to you. Well, who are you, Jesus, to be saying, but I say to you, to be speaking out these commands? In so many ways, his message was very, very self-focused. But then here's the paradox about it. At the same time as it being was so self-focused, you see a man who was so selfless. You see a man who was serving constantly, who was giving himself for other people constantly. You don't see a man who's selfish. I mean, you read through it and you don't. So you have this odd thing that here he's talking all about himself. In one sense, his teaching is 100% self-focused. In another sense, it's completely selfless. I mean, even when he talks about things like, I am the good shepherd, his very next phrase is, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He doesn't say that to honor himself. He says that to show, I'm giving myself for you. And so here's the strange paradox of Jesus' teaching. How can it be both? And he says, the reason I'm teaching like this is because I came to glorify God. That's my purpose. He says, that's where my teaching is all about, is it's all about glorifying my Father in heaven. All right, let's continue this interrogation here. And next, let's look at verse 25. Let's drop all the way down to verse 25. So they continue to talk to him here. And here's the next one. In verse 25, it says, some of the people of Jerusalem therefore said, is not this the man whom they seek to kill? And here he is speaking openly, and they say nothing to him. Can it be that the authorities really know that this is the Christ? But we know where this man comes from, and when the Christ appears, no one will know where he is from. All right, so at this point, he's done a lot of teaching, and people are starting to say, maybe he's the Christ. I mean, it sure sounds like it with the kinds of things he's saying here. It just sounds like he's not just a human. Maybe he's the one who's prophesied. But then they say, but wait, no. That can't be right. I mean, he's just some guy from Galilee. We know where this guy's from. If we were going to have God send the Christ to us, he'd be someone who comes out of nowhere. And so Jesus explains it like this. Here's what he says. Here's the question. Where is he from? And he explains it like this. Verse 28. So Jesus proclaimed as he taught in the temple, you know me, and you know where I come from. But I have not come of my own accord. He who sent me is true, and him you do not know. I know him, for I come from him, and he sent me. All right, he says, I'll give you a hint about where I came from. There's somebody who sent me. Somebody sent me. And then he kind of says, and the bad news is you don't really know him very well. He's saying, there's somebody who sent me here. What's he saying? He's saying the same thing, same answer he gave to all these questions. He said, where did I come from? I came from God. Now he continues this. Let's look at this question a little bit more. What he does is he continues through here and he's trying to show them here how the place I came from, you're not all that familiar with. And each time you notice with each of these questions, he holds the mirror up again and turns it back to them. And he says, there's a problem here. You don't know the guy that I came from. There's someone I came from, and you're not familiar with him. Now, it's kind of like if there's certain people that you look at them, and you know exactly who they're related to. I mean, the first time you meet them, you're like, oh, I know who you are. Well, how do you know who I am? Oh, because I knew your parents. There's just certain people like that. They just look so much like and act so much like and have all the mannerisms of their parents, and you can just say, oh, I know who you are. And that works assuming you know the parents. And here Jesus is saying, you know exactly who I was if you knew my Father. If you knew my Father, it would be pretty obvious who I am because I resemble him a lot. But there's a problem. The reason you're just still scratching your head and thinking, who is this guy? Is because you're not very familiar with my Father in heaven. That's the problem. And again, he's talking to religious people who have come to worship God, and he says, I don't think you really know God. All right, The interrogation continues in verse 30. Look with me in verse 30. So they were seeking to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. So things are heating up now. The more he turns the tables back on them, the more they say, oh, we got to get rid of this guy. And verse 31, yet many of the people believed in him. They said, when the Christ appears, will he do more signs than this man has done? All right, so here now we've gotten, now people are starting to believe in him. The more Jesus talks, the more polarized the crowd becomes. Some people are saying, we got to get rid of this guy. Other people are saying, oh, I believe in him. And other people are saying, maybe he's the Christ. And here's what happens in verse 32. The Pharisees heard the crowd muttering these things about him. And the chief priests and the Pharisees sent officers to arrest him. Jesus then said, I will be with you a little longer, and then I'm going to him who sent me. You will seek me, and you will not find me. Where I am, you cannot come. The Jews said to one another, where does this man intend to go that we will not find him? All right, so here's the next question. Where is he going? We already talked about where he's from. Where is he headed to now? Jesus says, hey, I'm going to be leaving soon. But the bad news is the place I'm going to, you're not going to be able to come to. Okay, well, where's that? They're all trying to figure out, where did this guy say he's going to go to? Where, do you know where he's going? And he's trying to explain it here. And throughout this conversation, he's going to hit this a little bit more. Jump with me to the next chapter, to chapter 8. Because in chapter 8, he explores this even more. I'm going to skip over the story of the woman caught in adultery because it's not as related to what we're talking about here. But if you continue further into the chapter, they're still questioning him. And look with me in verse 14 of chapter 8 because it gets us right back to this question again. Chapter 8, verse 14, Jesus answered, even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you do not know where I come from or where I am going. Here's the question again. Say, I know where I'm going, but you guys don't. All right, what's he saying about where he's going? Same thing again. He's saying, I'm going back to God. He talks about how I'm going to him who sent me. Same answer is given to all these things. The place I'm going is God. Now, again, he's turning it around on them, he's saying, but there's a problem. You can't get there. You're kind of stuck here. And he's saying the reason you don't understand where I'm going is you and I are on two totally different roads. You're totally unfamiliar with the place where I'm going to. It's kind of like if you told me after services, you said, hey, I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to head to Atlanta. And I said, where? And he said, Atlanta. Well, where's that? You're like, what? You don't know where Atlanta is? I mean, everybody around here knows where Atlanta is. And I kind of feel like that's where the way Jesus is feeling here. Like, hello, you should know this. You should know where I'm going to. The reason you don't know where I'm going to is you're totally unfamiliar with this location. You and I are on two totally separate roads right now. Jesus says, I'm going back to God, but I guess you're not because you don't seem to understand any of this stuff that I'm explaining to you. That's a problem. All right, so here he is trying to each time they ask a question, he's turning it back around. Let's bring this all together here. They've asked him a bunch of different questions. They've asked him about where his teaching comes from. They've asked him about who he's glorifying. They've asked him about where he's from. They've asked him about where he's going. Every question, he's basically answered the same way. So here's the big thing. What does this teach us about Jesus' character? When we piece these things together and we kind of try to figure out who Jesus is from this, what was Jesus' character? Here's what I see. That is Jesus' character. Jesus' character was all about God in every single sense. From the things that he spoke were all about God to the purpose he had, the person he was honoring, the reason he said anything, who he was trying to bring glory to, that was all about God. All the way to where he came from, what his past was all about, is all about God. Where he was headed, his direction for his life was all about God. Everything was about the Father. And I think that goes a whole lot deeper than just being more of this or more of that. It wasn't so much that Jesus was just a little bit more loving or a little bit more caring or a little bit more patient. It was that at the very foundation of his life, everything was God-centered. That's who Jesus was. And here's what that means. When it comes to imitating Christ, I think that's the answer. It's not as simple as me just saying, okay, well, tomorrow I need to be a little more patient. That's good. I do need to be more patient. But what's going to get me there is to make my life all about God. That has to be the foundation where every focus of my life is in God. The things I talk about need to be about God. The purpose of my life, the kind of person I'm bringing glory to and honor to, needs to be God. That where I came from, my spiritual birth, it's all about God. My destination, the goal for my life, needs to be God. That's what it all needs to be about. That's how we become more like Christ. All right, well, that's only part of the lesson. Now we've seen who Jesus is. Now what he does is the rest of the chapter, it's like they've been interviewing him. Now they're still trying to interview him, but it's like he's turned things around and there's a whole lot more of him interviewing them than them interviewing him. And so it seems like the rest of the chapter is going to be Jesus talking to them about their state. Look with me at what happens here. In verse 30 of chapter 8, it says, "And as he was saying these things, many believed in him." All right, so this is great. Now you've got people who are finally believing in him. But then look at what Jesus says in verse 31. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." So here he makes this odd statement. Here's people who believe in him. And then he says, you know what? If you continue doing what I said, then you'll get to be my disciples. What? But they believed. Apparently, there's a way to believe in Jesus and not have actually done what he says. And he's saying, you're not going to get anything out of that. There's no freedom in that. You're not going to be following me. You're not going to be my disciple if that's what it is. Now, we're not going to go a lot into that, but that's a key verse in the book of John, because John uses belief a lot. And it's important to understand that when he uses belief, a lot of times that's shorthand for a whole lot more things. And this text kind of shows here that just a mental thinking isn't really what it's all about. There's something a whole lot more than just that. So here's some people who believe in Jesus. And he's, wait a minute. You're going to have to actually do what I say if you're going to be my disciple. But then here's what they say. He says how you're going to, in that case, you're going to be free. You need some freedom from something. There's something you're in bondage to. You need to be free from that. And they say in verse 33, they answered him, "We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" So they're saying, wait a minute, what do you mean free? We're not slaves. What do you mean? And he says in verse 34, Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin." He's saying, there's a problem here. The reason I'm talking about slavery is because you've sinned. And whenever you've sinned, you're in bondage to that and you're stuck. And you need me to free you from that. All right, so he goes and he elaborates more on that. There's a whole bunch of things in there that they're just not getting and they're not liking. And so finally, they're saying, what do you mean? But we're Abraham's children and all that. And so then in verse 38, it says, "I speak of what I've seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." All right, here's what I want to focus on. Here in the last part, Jesus is back to showing this difference. You remember how at the beginning of the chapter he had talked about there's a difference between him and even his own brothers? That's what he's trying to show here at the end of the chapter. There is a difference between him and them. Him and these other people. Even people who at this point are saying they believe in him. He's saying there's still a difference. And he says the difference comes to our fathers. You remember Jesus' focus. What was his focus? It was all on his father. But there was something different. He's saying there's something different about your focus. Well, they don't want to hear that. Verse 39, it says, "And they answered him, Abraham is our father." All right. Jesus is trying to say, no, that's not what I mean. I don't mean physically descended, like who you physically descended from. There's another way to tell who your father is. He says, he's going to say here in the end of verse 39, Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works that Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works that your father did." Okay, here's what he's saying. My focus is all up here. So I don't see that with you guys. It seems like you have a different father. Now, he's going to give them two ways to identify that their father is not the same as his father. And the two things he does, the first one he says is your actions or your works. He says, if Abraham was your father, like you say, then the way you got to identify that is if you're doing the things that Abraham did. You're saying, I don't mean physical features and that kind of genetics. I mean, you know you're his child if you behave the way he behaves. And here he's trying to show the same thing about God. Here Jesus has been showing, he's been showing all the way through here that God is his father because came from God. I speak the things of God. I glorify God. I'm going back to God. All these things, everything's about God. And then he looks at them and he's saying, I don't see that with you guys. I don't notice your life being all about God. I don't see you doing this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing that God does. In fact, he says, it's almost like Jesus is saying, I've been around God a lot. I know him pretty well. And you just don't resemble him very much. You say he's your father. It doesn't seem like it. And here's what they say in verse 41. In verse 41, you are doing the works your father did. They said to him, we were not born out of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. So there's their claim. They're saying, no. We are descended from God. All right, so the first test was the actions. He's saying the actions don't add up very well here. Second test, verse 42. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I came from God, and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You cannot bear to hear my word. Here he started this whole thing out by saying, my message came from God. And now he's saying, and you're not listening to it very well. So the second test is, who do I listen to? To know whether I'm a child of God, Jesus is saying the two things you can look at is, are you living the way God lives? And are you listening to the things that God says? If I'm saying I'm a child of God, but I'm saying, oh, but the thing that's written right there, I'm not going to do that. Well, that's not how God's children act. Or if I'm saying I'm a child of God, but I'm doing all these things that God would never do, how's that work? That's what Jesus is pointing out. Here he's coming to people who are very religious, who are worshiping God in the temple right here, right now. And he's saying, there's a problem here. I don't really see you guys being as children of God because of these two blatant problems. All right, here's what he finally does. He brings this all very home to them in verse 44. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Here's what he says. There's two possible fathers here. You think God is your father. Well, he's saying, let me tell you, there's another possible father. What about, here's my father, there's your father, is what Jesus says. Yikes. He says, the reason I can tell that is because of your actions. If your actions look a lot like God, then you must be God's children. But if your actions just keep looking a lot like Satan, where does that leave you? Yikes. And what's really scary to me is that he was talking to the religious people here who thought they were so much worshiping God and had completely deceived themselves, thought they were on God's side. And he says, just look at your life. There's this thing and this thing and this thing. And that doesn't look like God. That looks like Satan. And that means you're not God's child if that's the way you live. That's the way Jesus tied this all together. All right. Here's what I want to show us from all of this. Jesus' character was all about God. From the very beginning, from his very origin, to his message, to his purpose, to his destination, everything was about God. If I want to be God's child, I need to be exactly the same way, where everything's about God. And what Jesus shows is there's two options. I start out in sin. I start out worshiping. I start out with Satan as my father, but if I believe in him and I follow what he says, then he sets me free like he talks about here, and then I need to change to where my life is now all about God. And so here's the big thing. When you see these two possible options, question is, which one am I going to choose? I choose it by my actions and by who I'm listening to. Am I going to choose to make Satan my father, or am I going to choose to make God my father? It all comes down to who I'm listening to and who I'm living for. If you're not yet a child of God, then we invite you to come forward and to choose to be God's child this morning, to choose to be baptized into Christ, to be forgiven of your sins, and to be set free and begin living every day focused completely on God. If you're not a Christian, then we invite you to come forward this morning while together we stand and we sing.